Good evening. Welcome to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yoes, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. Thank you for joining us for our first of 2 hours on this Tuesday. Support for WEAA traffic and MTA report is provided by TheraWork Relief. TheraWork Relief. More information available, TheraWorksRelief.com. Coming up in the second hour of the show, our friends from the Black Mental Health Alliance will return. That includes Brother Richard Rowe, Program Manager for the Black Mental Health Alliance, as well as Dr. Lakita Carter. She's a clinical psychologist, licensed psychologist, and board member of the Black Mental Health Alliance. They're going to be talking about parenting and a parenting caretakers workshop series that's coming up with the Black Mental Health Alliance, I believe, on September 19th. So we'll get to that conversation in the second hour. Plus, the Baltimore Energy Challenge, which enables city residents to save money while making a positive impact on the planet. That program will be we'll talk more about that program with Becca Baker. She's director of the Baltimore Energy Challenge, and Daniel O'Neill. He's an AmeriCorps member. That's all coming up in the second hour of the show. A little bit later in this first hour, we will turn to Elizabeth Alex. Elizabeth Alex is the community organizing director of community organizing for CASA Maryland. We'll be obviously continuing the conversation we begin in a couple of minutes about the rescinding of DACA by the Trump administration. We'll also be talking to Jesus Perez. He's a Maryland dreamer, one of the young people that are going to be that could be affected by this decision by the Trump administration. And we begin the conversation about the rescinding of DACA, the dismantling, if you will, of DACA, at least the attempt to, by the Trump administration, with Nick Steiner of he is the ACLU of Maryland's Equal Justice Works Immigrants Rights Fellow. Nick Steiner, welcome back to the program.
Hi, good to be with you.
Of course. Before we get started, Nick, let me remind my listeners to make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9. And don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yoes. That is my name, S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S. Or go to my Facebook page if you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me. I will share with people unless you don't want me to, and of course, I will not. Now, back to Nick Steiner of the ACLU. Nick, this decision by the Trump administration has been met with, I mean, to say resistance is the understatement maybe of the year in this most incredible year that we've seen, or almost year that we've seen since the 45th president has taken the White House. Why don't you go ahead and take a minute or so to articulate the ACLU's position on this decision by the Trump administration?
Sure, yeah. So the DACA program that was initiated under President Obama, Trump today had rescinded with a 6-month waiting period, basically, for those who have already applied for DACA. We feel that not only is this a slap in the face to the 800,000 or so youth who have applied for DACA, who before lived in the shadows and actually finally had the chance to come out and get work permits and start working and be recognized for all of the work that they do for our country. This rescission of DACA is a complete slap in the face. It's a larger effort, I think, of the Trump administration to target immigrants under feelings of white supremacy and xenophobia. It is absolutely no reason to target dreamers this way.
Well, the reality Nick Steiner, is that Donald Trump absolutely, I don't know if he said outright that he was going to rescind DACA if he was elected president of the United States. But he certainly, there were strong indications that this was the direction that he would move in. And I don't think, given what you just said, the fact that this is a white nationalist president, you mentioned white supremacy. I'm not saying that people aren't appalled and enraged by what this 45th president has done, but it shouldn't be a surprise. I don't think it's a surprise to people that he's actually done it.
Right. No, I don't think it's a surprise at all. I mean, and he's also been indicating that he was going down this route anyway in the past few weeks, just talking about the lawsuit that was threatened against him because one of his campaign promises was to end DACA, and since he hadn't ended DACA yet, one of the Texas AG, the Attorney General of Texas, and attorney generals in other states threatened to file a lawsuit against him, and that was part of, I think, the motivation behind ending DACA so soon and at this moment.
This action by the Trump administration impacts, at least the official number that is being reported, is about 800,000 young people, young undocumented immigrants that were brought to the United States as children, in some cases as infants. They don't know any other country, quite frankly. They don't know any other language. But in the grand scheme of things, Nick, some people would argue that that's a relatively small number. How many people actually, from the perspective of the ACLU, are actually impacted by what the Trump administration decided to make official today?
So I want to be clear, though. I mean, even though Trump has kind of given this like 6-month period that it's supposed to be like this grace period before they totally get rid of DACA, but the fact that they're signaling and I mean we're talking about young adults who came here as kids for the most part, and in the majority of the cases had no real say in whether or not they came to the United States. But that being said, they're here now. They grew up in the U.S. They're now young adults working. They're doing everything that any U.S. citizen would be doing if they were a young adult as a U.S. citizen here. And so what this does is it kind of creates sense of chaos and confusion in a way that they had experienced before DACA, because they didn't really know what might happen, what immigration enforcement might happen against them and their families. And finally, in 2012, when Obama signed the executive order that made DACA the law, that it kind of gave them some stability and gave them the opportunity to work. And now that stability has been gone by this rescission.
I'm going to read part of a letter that former President Barack Obama wrote, and I believe it was published today, in response to the Trump administration move against DACA. The letter reads in part, quote, "To target these young people is wrong because they have done nothing wrong. It is self-defeating because they want to start new businesses, staff our labs, serve in our military, and otherwise contribute to the country we love. And it is cruel. What if our kid's science teacher or our friendly neighbor turns out to be a dreamer? Where are we supposed to send her? To a country she doesn't know or remember, with a language she may not even speak." That is part of the letter that was published today by President Obama in response to the initiative, the DACA initiative that he implemented during his administration, to be taken down, to be dismantled, or the Trump administration has signaled that they intend to do so. But can you explain, Nick, what this alleged window, basically kicking the can down the road to the Congress, in a way, I mean, in a way, a legislatively cowardly thing to do, but that should be no surprise, obviously, from this president either. But can you explain that a little bit? How alleged Congress is supposed? I saw a report that there's supposed to be bipartisan legislation being worked on by Lindsey Graham, and I can't remember who the Democrat is in that scenario.
Senator Durbin also.
Right, Dick Durbin of Illinois.
Yeah. It is Congress's job to pass immigration laws and kind of.
Which they did not do during the Obama administration, and that therefore, at least from the perspective of the president, the former president, he was forced to implement an executive order that created DACA in the first place. Correct?
Right. Right. That is right. And that's the whole basis for DACA in the first place. I mean, as the executive branch, the president is in control of immigration enforcement, and that's what DACA was meant to do. It was deprioritizing certain individuals, since it's not possible to enforce immigration law against everyone. There has to be some kind of priority system, and as part of that priority system, President Obama issued an executive order to deprioritize the Dreamers, as a way of saying, look, we understand that we can't enforce immigration law against everybody. So what we're going to do is we're just going to leave these people alone, let them work, let them live their lives.
Right.
And all of that though is part of the larger context. I mean, even under President Obama, President Obama's nickname was Deporter in Chief. There was no other president, including Trump, who has deported as many people. Granted, under Trump, the number of deportations of the number of arrests, people who are being accused of immigration violations has increased significantly, but the number of deportations has not.
Right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yost, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. We're talking about the decision today by the Trump administration to rescind DACA, this initiative that was implemented by former President Barack Obama. DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, affects nearly 800,000 young undocumented immigrants brought to the United States as children. Nick, from the perspective of the ACLU, obviously this has sent shockwaves through much of the immigrant community. Now, let's be clear. When we think of DACA, typically I believe people think of people of Hispanic origin from Hispanic countries, Latin American countries, South American countries, other countries. But this does not just affect Hispanic people. This is about immigration, period. So we're talking about people who immigrate from African nations. Or, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's right. That's right.
African nations, European nations, Caribbean nations. I mean, immigration, period. This isn't just about immigration of Hispanic individuals. This affects immigration as a whole.
Right. And there's this common image of people flooding through the southern U.S. border. And, I mean, 40% of the undocumented population in the United States are here because they overstayed a visa. So they had a legitimate tourist visa. They came into the United States, and then they overstayed the length of period that was granted on that visa. I know of a few people who had that exact situation happen to them. Not all from Central America, and are recipients of the DACA program and have status here in the United States. As a result of overstaying a tourist visa. So yes, it's not just people from Central America who are kind of are. I mean, the image is that they're like coming over the southern border, when in reality, that's not actually the majority of cases that we see.
Right. So legally, what options do people who are obviously concerned about this order being rescinded have? Is there a path that the ACLU is going to travel down to try to protect some of these people?
So on the advocacy front, I think it's very, very, very important that people come out in support of the bipartisan Dream Bill that's in Congress right now, that would basically enact some of the protections that existed under DACA, but legislatively, which has been the criticism all along, that Congress is not acting. But currently there's a bipartisan effort right now to make those DACA protections into law. And so on the advocacy front, I think it's really important to make sure that your congressperson is supporting the DREAM Act. We have about 6 months to get that bill passed. So that, I think, is the strongest and best protection that we can hope for. There's a lot of, I can see some defensive efforts that could be done in case, and I mean, we saw this in the past few months, even though DACA hadn't been rescinded yet, there were individuals who were being targeted, even though they had, even though they were DACA recipients. And there was at least one individual who was actually deported who had DACA status. So it's not completely out of the realm of possibilities, but even though we still have this 6 month period that Trump may start targeting people with DACA status now. And in those cases, then we could help and get involved in the legal defense, in immigration court, and things like that.
Right. Nick Steiner is the ACLU of Maryland's Equal Justice Works Immigrants Rights Fellow. Nick, thank you for your insight on this and helping us discern what is going on here. And we will keep reporting on the situation as we go forward. Thank you, Nick. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go to a phone call real quick. I would be remiss if I did not speak to Big Al on this in Cherry Hill. Big Al, you're on First Edition. Thank you for calling in. The reason, Big Al, I wanted to speak to you is because you've been consistent on this issue for at least the last couple of years. I want to ask you before you, begin to respond to what was done by the Trump administration. The fact that this affects immigrants from all over the world, does that cause you some concern?
No, it absolutely doesn't. You know, when I hear DACA, that word, or I hear dreamers, I feel like puking.
Why? Why, Big Al? Let me talk to you. Big Al, hold on. Now, you know I've engaged you on this conversation many times, and I have no problem doing that. You're one of our most consistent callers. You've always supported this show, and you know I appreciate that. But why does it make you feel like puking, man? I don't understand that.
Okay. When Baltimore is approaching 300 murders, yeah. Detroit is approaching 1,000 murders, Chicago, and same thing, Detroit and Philly. When black kids are living in nightmares, and no one serious about has been addressing those issues, to me, that's my priority.
All right.
Okay, you know, that's what I'm concerned about. I want black kids to have dreams too, and not have nightmares at the end of a gun. You know, 15-year-old kids, babies being gunned down.
Right.
You know, let's talk about their dreams.
Well, you know, we talk about those dreams and visions all the time on our show. But I mean, does one exclude the other though, Big Al? I mean, does it? If we
no, you're right. I agree with you. One doesn't, you know, preclude the other. But there, you know, the issue for us needs to be priority. Okay, and right now, how many dreamers are being gunned down in Baltimore City? Very few, unless we're not keeping statistics. Okay, I just saw an article about $1.3 billion being given to Guatemala by the Tuskegee. Well, the same thing as if you draw the timeline between that and the Tuskegee experiment, $1.3 billion given to those people, and nothing, the only thing we got was an apology. You know, there seems to be a worldwide disrespect for black people. And unless we stand up and be concerned about ourselves, no one else will.
All right. Fair enough. And I mean, you know, I don't disagree with that. A big Al, thank you for calling in. We appreciate your time and you listening to the show as always. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about DACA. We're going to speak to Elizabeth Alex. She is Senior Director of Community Organizing for CASA Maryland. And I believe we're going to be able to speak to young man Jesus Perez, who is a Maryland dreamer. We'll continue this conversation coming up in the next segment of First Edition. Stay tuned. To First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yost, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper, as we continue our conversation about the Trump administration action, official action today of rescinding DACA, the initiative, the executive order implemented by President Obama. DACA stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. We shift to, on the phone, Elizabeth Alex. She is the Director of Community Organizing for CASA Maryland. Elizabeth Alex, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks so much for touching this important issue.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we have to talk about, we're reconnecting about this issue specifically, the rescinding the DACA order by President Obama. But from your perspective as a community organizer for CASA, this has to touch many of the people that you serve in your organization.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is 800,000 young people nationwide, but that's over 10,000 of them are right here in Maryland, including several thousand right here in Baltimore. We were at the White House this morning to hear the announcement from the street with almost 1,000 young people and allies gathered there in protest. And the impact was palpable. You could feel the emotions, both the tears and the anger at the same time, both from Dreamers and their allies. And I think that's really what has brought this movement to where it is, right? These young people have really carried their hearts on their sleeves, and they were the first to come out of the shadows and say, you know what, I'm undocumented, and I need this chance. I need to come out of the shadows and live my life, a full life here in the United States, and I am worthy of that right. And I think, you know, for so many of them and all the accomplishments they have achieved in the last 5 years under this program, this is a big blow. Today is a big blow. I do think that their resilience is amazing and that they are ready to fight back, and in fact, that fight has already begun.
We hope to be joined by Jesus Perez. He is a Maryland dreamer. He is en route. Hopefully he'll be here momentarily. But while we wait for Jesus, Elizabeth, I'll ask the same question or make the same statement that, to you as I made to Nick Steiner of the ACLU. This could not necessarily, even though it is a massive blow to many people, this could not have been a surprise given the occupant, the 45th president of the United States, the occupant in the White House right now.
Honestly, part of the surprise, and I think part of our victory, is the fact that it took this long, right? We began preparing for this day, the day after Election Day, last November, right? Because this was a campaign trail issue. This was a commitment that he had made to Trump voters. And we began the pushback in November of 2016. And honestly, I have to give some of that organizing and that pushback the credit for the fact that we were able to withhold this rescission until today. I think, and from here on out, that organizing is going to be the base of this fight to come as we carry this fight into Congress.
So now, what is the strategy from your perspective as a community organizer of CASA, and obviously your organization has been working with the immigrant communication, and not just Hispanic immigrant community, but many immigrant communities. But what is the strategy from your perspective, from CASA's perspective, on this, or not having this executive order rescinded?
Sure, I think we have a couple of windows, right? We have a short-term window to help as many people process their renewals and get their paperwork in order to ensure that they will have as much time on their current work permit as possible and have that window of safety within which to figure out their next step. And at the same time, helping people on an individual level figure out, are there other avenues that they may have towards permanent legal relief? Most people don't, but some people may, and if so, we want to help them find that. If they have employers that maybe may have learned that they are so incredibly valuable that they're willing to go through all the red tape and pay all the costs to sponsor them as an employer, there may be other opportunities that some of these young folks have. But at the same time, you know, the reason this six-month window is here is for us to take this fight to Congress. There are currently several pieces of legislation already introduced in Congress, and we need to carry that fight forward, ensure that a Clean Dream Act passes both chambers and gets signed into law by the president that will allow these same young people to live here without that fear of deportation.
What gives you confidence, though, Elizabeth Alex, that this president, of all people, would sign that legislation, that Clean Dream Act, if you will, that you just alluded to a moment ago? What gives you confidence that this president who has aligned himself with white supremacists and white nationalists in a very demonstrative way, quite frankly, would be anything but an obstructionist for this type of legislation to go through?
I mean, it's been very interesting in the last several weeks to see this issue drive a wedge within the GOP, right? So we're seeing Paul Ryan stand up and say he supports Dreamers. We're seeing numerous Republicans wanting to issue a discharge petition in the House, even though they're a majority party, to pass a Dream Act. We have attorneys general who had originally said, yes, we're going to sue the government until they rescind DACA, backing off from that threat because they're realizing that right now, popular support is in favor of the Dreamers. If these folks are looking with a cold, calculated political eye at 2018, this is an issue that's going to cause the GOP to lose in the House of Representatives and really across the board if they don't think about it very carefully, because this is a very popular issue. Dreamers have a lot of support from all the amazing work that they've done in the last 5 years and before that, and all the people that have been touched by their stories. This would be political suicide for the GOP to kill this legislation.
Okay. I'm going to take a couple of phone calls, Elizabeth, real quick. I just want to hear what some of our listeners have to say. I mean, not everybody, my listeners are of a divergent opinions, and I'll just leave it at that. But we'll listen to them, and we'll talk more afterwards. Let's go to Brother Leo Burrows from Bolton Hill. Brother Burrows, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Hello.
Hey, Brother Burrows. How you doing?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Well, I'm in favor of DACA. I mean, I don't think, because I'm an advocate of for justice and fair play, I don't think we can turn a blind eye to the children who are affected, who could theoretically be sent back, or realistically, to places that they've never known, many of them. I think that would be grossly unfair. And, of course, I'm not surprised that the president and others lack that sensitivity. I just would note that this is not only a problem. I know the Republican Party is spearheading this initiative, I think, but there are Democrats who feel the same way in opposition to DACA. So I would say to those black people who want to hold these because our issues aren't being addressed, I think that's wrong as well. We've got to fight. We've got to mobilize. And black country, including the elites, are going to have to mobilize, do more marches, file more lawsuits, and turn this country upside down until we, too, achieve justice.
Right. Brother Burroughs, and I think you make a really important point, and I alluded to this when I was talking to Big Al. I just don't understand. I don't understand why it's an either-or proposition. I don't understand that.
Well,
that
some of us are angry, and I'm angry. I'm damn angry.
Well, a lot of us are.
I'm not going to pretend that I, you know, if you stand for what is right and decent and fair, you cannot but support DACA and the concept behind it. But by the same token, I know the plight of black people first and foremost. I'm a pan-Africanist. You better believe it. And we better fight harder now than ever before for job creation and the HBCUs and all the things that are affecting our existence as black people throughout the diaspora.
Understood.
If we don't, we're dead on arrival.
Brother Burroughs, thank you for your comment. We appreciate it. Elizabeth, I wanted to reach out to some of my callers specifically because there is this kind of mixed message in the black community, feeling like that the DACA program is something that was specifically tailored to the immigrant community, but specifically, I think, in the minds of many people, the Hispanic immigrant community, at the cost of black people across this country, and that seems like an odd kind of juxtaposition or position, rather, to have. It's something that I can't quite wrap my mind around. But I'm sure this is not the first time you've heard it.
Not at all. But I think it's becoming even more clear. You know, we look at who is at the base of the opposition to DACA and who is fueling white supremacy in this country, and it's the same cast of characters, right? Steve Bannon is one of the primary people still continuing to lobby in the White House against DACA and against immigration reform. The same people that are writing the legislation to privatize prisons so for profit are the same folks that are passing legislation to criminalize young black and brown people to fill those beds and also fill the other half with immigrants. And so it's all part of one system that is set up to make profit off of our black and brown brothers and sisters in this country. And I think what we're seeing is more and more people are opening their eyes and recognizing, just like your caller, that these are two pieces of the same fight,
right?
And that the only people that win are those architects, those folks that are setting this entire system up on purpose and attempting to drive these wedges between us as the anchors within this progressive movement. And if we don't work together and we don't support each other, we're never going to win.
Well said. Let me go to Brother Michael Scott of Equity Matters on the phone. Brother Mike, how you doing, man?
Hey, man, maintaining and making it happen.
Yes,
so,
sir.
I just wanted to say, first of all, for our brothers and sisters of African descent, you know, not to make the mistake, firstly, of assuming all immigrants are Latino.
Exactly
there
true.
There are many African and Caribbean immigrants that will be affected by that. That's
absolutely
number one. Number two, I really invite us to think about our internalized racial oppression, that anytime we start mimicking and mirroring the language of white supremacy, we've got a problem. Number three, you know, we know a little something about breakup of families that has to do with policy and practice. And,
yes,
and so, you know, I really have to invite folks to rethink, how they're thinking about this. Because someone else's, you have a blessing, doesn't impede mine. I have a blessing, it doesn't impede yours. But when we band together, that manifold, you know, we have a manifold increase of blessings. So this notion that families can be broken up, that a human being can be illegal, which makes them objectified, is something that people of African descent know something about. So when we find ourselves on the wrong side of the argument in history, we really got to check ourselves. So you know, I'm fully in support of Liz and CASA and DACA. And, you know, I just think folks that are short-sighted that think that we can't walk and chew gum. And it's very African to do both and not either or. That's a European-centric white organizational culture argument. We can be about the business of black folks and be about the business of supporting what's right for immigrant people, whether they be black or brown.
Understood. Michael Scott of Equity Matters. Brother Michael, it's always a pleasure to hear your voice, man. Thank you for calling in.
All right. Thanks.
Elizabeth, we are joined in the studio by, Jesus Perez. He's a Maryland dreamer. He made it in. We participated in the march today, Jesus?
Yes.
Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
No, thank you.
Tell us just plainly, what is this decision by the Trump administration? You're one of those, I'm believing you're one of those nearly 800,000 people that was affected by the DACA executive order by Barack Obama 5 years ago. First of all, let me ask you, what does this Trump decision, this Trump action, say to you? What is it? How does it affect you in your heart? How does it affect you?
Well, it affects me, and it means that we're once again under attack. Once again, they're playing a political game with us, throwing the ball now to Congress, saying, hey, I'm not going to decide your life. It's going to be Congress, which, like I said, means playing a ball back and forth.
And this is your life. This isn't a game.
Yes, this is my life.
And the life of 800,000 people.
Of course, of many other dreamers here locally and also nationally across the country. And it means that, you know, things will change, but that doesn't mean it's going to set us back and, you know, we're going to fold our arms and cross our hands and say, oh, okay, he made the announcement. Let's just sit down and be quiet. No, we're going to actually stand up and fight back and stand against this announcement that he made today. Jeff Sessions, and say, you know what? It may seem that you might have won making this announcement, but actually it has just reboosted our energy and edge and recharge to fight back with this announcement. And like I said, taking our community too and educating them on how we're going to stand up.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yose, your host. I'm editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. I'm on the phone with Elizabeth Alex. She's Senior Director of Community Organizing for CASA Maryland. In the studio with me is Jesus Perez. He's a Maryland dreamer. Jesus, I want to ask you now, beyond the announcement today by Attorney General Jefferson Beauregard Sessions, let's talk about your circumstances coming to this country. I mean, can you describe them in general?
Yes. So when I arrived to the... for most people that call it the land of opportunity. I came here when I was five. I graduated from Baltimore City High School in 2012, same year that former President Obama made the announcement about DACA. I qualified for DACA. I have it for the last 4 years and been able to have a good employment and been able to provide for my family and an extra income as well. Been working for a well-known institution here in the city of Baltimore known as Johns Hopkins University as a program research assistant. With that, I've been able to help many young people in the city between the ages of 15 to 24 to help them to find clinical health services in the city of Baltimore. Known that, you know, we have so many things going on in the city right now that, you know, if we could help them in some way or some capacity, this is the way I'm helping them.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And as we've been stating, this is affecting 800,000 people across the United States. It's hard for me to reconcile that you've been able to come here at age five. I mean, this is essentially the only country that you've known. Establish roots, find a good job, and I can't imagine what it must feel like right now, the sense of maybe insecurity connected to this announcement. Can you describe, though, Jesus, what the energy was like today when you were marching over in Washington, D.C., or at least waiting for the announcement near the White House.
Well, today's announcement, as we were waiting for the announcement to come, there was a lot of, we heard before even going to Washington, D.C., we heard some rumors,
right.
But we weren't going to, give up or believe what the rumors were. And so what we kept saying was, we're going to wait until they make the announcement, the official announcement of where DACA stands. And while we were waiting, there was a lot of people, nervous, a lot of dreamers. And we also had a couple parents with us too. And it was just a sense of unity, powerful, because even though we were waiting for an announcement to come, we were just together. We were together as we were together in 2012 when President Obama made the announcement. But this time it's more emotional sense and, more like, let's see what happens with our future. So it was a big unity that we both felt today in the White House, in front of the White House.
Understood. Let me take a few more phone calls while we have some time. Let me go to T, who's been holding on for a while. T, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Hi, I'm well, Sean. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I think that when you start talking about this issue being mutually exclusive for Americans of African descent,
mm-hmm.
And the Latino community, I think that you what needs to happen is policy needs to be attached strategically. So now you have a DACA that's being revisited. So I think what Latino brothers and sisters need to do is start going after their representatives, their Latino representatives,
right.
to tack on specific things that would impact the Black community. So let's talk about criminal reform, and dealing in that. I support DACA because it is a diaspora issue that impacts Black and brown people.
Of course.
But you also want to have progressives like the young man, Jesus, was in your studio, as well as Elizabeth, to get those messages throughout the community. Because I mean, if we really be real, there definitely are apartheid systems within Latino communities with regard to dark, colorism and sure. issues like that.
Okay.
So we can't ignore those issues. And what happens is we do see that Latino communities, because they cross party lines when it comes to these types of issues, but they're silent on our issues. So what I would like to see as a good faith act is policy start to intertwine. I don't want to talk about just supporting your issues and ours, but whether it's the LBGQ community or the Latino community, let's start intertwining policy.
Understood.
And let's push that through. Understood. There you go. Thanks.
Understood. T, thank you for your call and your insights. We appreciate it. Elizabeth, I mean, what T was explaining was a more cohesive, if you will, united front of progressive communities in the United States, and I don't think that she's wrong about that.
No, I think she's exactly right, and I think that's what this country is building towards right now. There have been dreamers marching with the March from Charlottesville for the last 6 or 7 days that they've been marching. There's been, I think we're starting to see there's been Latino immigrants here in City Baltimore advocating really hard on police reform issues throughout this entire consent decree process. We're starting to see, I think, some of this cross-fertilization and people recognizing that these issues are not isolated issues, right? That they are, in fact, all connected, and that the only one that wins by keeping any of our brothers and sisters down and removing their power are these sort of white supremacist oppressors, right? So we need to take that language, help everybody understand that, because it is an education process, and then really put those pieces in place, just like your caller has mentioned. And the criminal justice system is exactly the place to begin.
Right. Let me take another phone call. Let me go to John next. John, you're on First Edition. How are you doing?
Yes. Thank you, Sean, for the opportunity. Yes, this last election really was a big disappointment, because if that coalition of the of people of color had hung a little tighter in the youth, Hispanics are going to have to do a better job of turning out to vote. You cannot, 45% of the registered voters, that's not good enough. And that divide between the English speaking only, because Trump did almost as well as Mitt Romney did in that last election. That's something that's going to happen. And there is more cooperation than what most people, you know, are aware of, because the Hispanic caucus and the Black caucus, they don't publicize enough these efforts that they have worked jointly on. But there has to be, and it looks pretty bleak. I mean, the Republican Congress is not going to pass comprehensive immigration reform, nor are they going to pass a Dreamer Act standing alone. Trump made it known what he was going to do, and we didn't take him seriously enough.
Well, John, and thank you for your call. The 45th president has had many failures in this White House. He's lost a lot, despite what he promised. Many wins, so many wins that you would get tired of winning. Well, he's lost a lot, and he lost on Obamacare, and he's lost with the wall. He's lost on a lot of different issues. And when we've got this signal from Paul Ryan in the House of Representatives, Speaker of the House, that he is on board with DACA. I don't think it's going to be a slam dunk, as John just tried to describe, for the Republicans to go ahead and implement Donald Trump's wishes here, Elizabeth. I don't think it's going to be a slam dunk at all.
I don't think so either, and I think that's partly due to some amazing organizing happening on the ground, and it's partly due to the fact that the Republican Party itself is beginning to crack, and I think we're seeing that in a lot of places. Your caller just mentioned, you know, how hard it's going to be to pass a standalone Dream Act, and I agree. This is why we're going to need to stand united, because what could happen, right? Will they say, okay, take the Dream Act, but in order to get that good piece, you're going to have to add the wall and all this money for immigration enforcement? Well, then that's budget money that's also not going to education and healthcare programs, and you see how this begins to actually affect everyone, and particularly low-income Black and brown communities across the country, immigrants or not. And so I think it is all going to be part of this singular struggle that we're going to have to work on together. But I think we have a chance. I remain optimistic. I think what we're seeing is that organizing works, and we'll see what happens by March.
Yep. Elizabeth Alex is Senior Director of Community Organizing for CASA Maryland. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us this evening. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Jesus Perez is a Maryland Dreamer. Jesus, all the best to you, man. Thank you for coming in and talking to us.
No, thank you for having me on your show. And hopefully the community of Baltimore also unites with us in the next 6 months to continue to fight this announcement.
Amen. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the second half of First Edition will be visited by our friends, the Black Mental Health Alliance, Brother Richard Rowe and Dr. Lakita Carter. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition.